Hi everybody, I'm Pete, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Chris will be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And first things first, thank the group and Derek for this invitation to me to share tonight my experience, strength, and hope on steps 1-7. I've learned many, many times by doing this, regardless of what I've done the day before, the week before, when invitations like this are extended to me, it simply shows that God has spoke through a good conscience and your spirit has extended an invitation to mine. And when that stuff happens, we commence shoulder to shoulder upon a common journey. And when we follow a few simple rules laid out in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, not contemporary AA, but Alcoholics Anonymous big book, when we follow a few of those simple rules, we can get rocketed, catapulted to a place called the sunlight of the spirit, or very simply a word called bliss. So I thank you for this invite for me to be here and share about steps 1-7, and I'll come at you experientially about 1-7, not about what I think or feel or my opinion on it, because that's useless to an alcoholic who needs a solution, and it's useless to people who want to talk about the solution. It's kind of like getting in a car and going to a meeting and talking about the ninth step, what you would do if I was in the ninth step. I don't want to know about that. I want to hear from someone who's done the ninth step, who can teach me how to do it, what their experience were like. We can be around here a while and acquire a lot of knowledge. If we work with this book, with the sponsor, we'll acquire knowledge. I mean, how could you not? Sitting down doing assignments out of the big book. But I can't say this enough to encourage you to bypass the knowledge and just seek experience. The knowledge you'll acquire, but we need to be really careful, because the very things that take me to God can be the very things that block me from God. And it's called worshiping intellect, worshiping the knowledge, worshiping the methodology in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a subtle shift that happens, and it boomerangs on us, because we go from having all this information and having a little bit of an experience to forget the experience, I feel good, and I know what I need to do. And we throw sound bites out in the back of the room and tell the newcomers, well, read page 24 or read page 44 or something like that. And we fall in love with our own intellect. But when we go home and hit the pillow, we wonder why we're really living on page 52. And not experiencing what the promises talk about in steps 10 and 11. Now, contemporary AA will tell you right up front, as long as you put the plug in a jug and don't drink and go to meetings, as long as you're sober, you're a winner. And I'll argue with that. I'll challenge that with any real alcoholic. Because putting the drink down is just the beginning of this. I mean, I put the drink down because I was locked up in jail a few times. It had nothing to do with being a recovered alcoholic. It had very little to do with being on this path. It just meant I was taken away from my medicine for a little while. So again, seek experience. If you're new and you're just starting out on this path, you don't need to seek for belief. You don't need to seek for faith. Seek experience and you will take care of your faith and belief. And if you're on this path a little while, wondering why, wherever I go, there I am, and it's unmanageable. I'm living on page 52 and I can't get away from it. I'm hitting a wall. I'm flatlining in Alcoholics Anonymous. Try reworking the first nine proposals and seeking experience, and you'll know if it's ego that's keeping you sick, because as soon as someone says, hey, I need to go through the first nine proposals, I'm not ready to do that. I'll stay here sick. I'll be restless, irritable, and discontented, put on my AA game face, and the solution's offered to me, revisit the first nine proposals, and I say, no, I'm not ready to do that yet. Ego. Maybe pride. No one should see me going through the work again. And as my sponsor put out to me one time, he said, did you eat today? And I said, yeah. He says, why? You ate yesterday. And then he pressed me. He says, what would happen? I said, well, I would get hungry. And then what? I'd probably get frail and sick and then eventually die. He says, right. So you eat regularly. Well, what about nourishment for the soul? What about nurturing the spirit? What about growing in understanding and effectiveness? What about seeking this power? We forgot that. So I need to continually rework the steps. I get through the first nine proposals, and the power I get in 10 or 11 will make me move, will allow me to move through the first nine again and again and again. And I continually smash ego. I continually kill self, all the manifestations of self. It's about growing up spiritually. If we're new in here for the first time, you know, you're kind of being led around by the sponsor. What do I do now? Okay, third step. Okay, fourth step. What do I do now? And then we have an experience. But that's not the beginning and end of it all. Because alcoholism is not done with me. And the sharper I get, the more awake I get in here, my illness gets just as sharp and looks for a crack in the armor. Well, we can't get him or her on booze, but we can work on the relationship angle. Where is he or she unmanageable? The financial angle, the sex, the food, whatever it may be. So I continually go through the steps. We ought to continually go through these steps and kill manifestations of self. Successful living, daily dying. And we have to have God's help. And our book is being really mild and really gentle when they say we have to have God's help. We need God, period. I turn to God no longer for help. Because for me, I hear, I have it, I just need a little push. But I must turn all things into the Father of life besides of us. Oh, my book tells me that. God is everything or nothing. So I turn everything to God. Don't ask for his help. I beg him to show me. And he always does. And it's on his calendar. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1980. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I don't say that to boast, because if I didn't say it, I'd be falsely humble. If I didn't say I was a recovered alcoholic, I'd also be lying to another alcoholic. And the power I've been able to access in Alcoholics Anonymous by going through this work, by living in all three sides of the triangle, it has brought me to a place of being a recovered alcoholic, which is the first promise on the title page of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I've had people walk out on me in AA meetings. They didn't like the idea that I brought a big book into an AA meeting. Which is like if you belong to a religious community and like I'm a Catholic, if I brought the Bible into church, the priest would say, what are you bringing that thing in here for? But it happens in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you take some experience that you want to share out of the big book or bring the book in there, you know, 20 people walk out. And I've had people walk out on me in the middle of a talk when I said I'm recovered, because what they heard was cured. And if I can't love them, I bless them, because they don't know what they're talking about. They're just simply uninformed, and my job is to stand on the firing line and inform that I'm not cured, just recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, which is a long way from where I left off in 1988 in the back of a hallway June 23rd, where the obsession to drink alcohol was on me as long as I was awake. The phenomenon called craving was on me as long as I was drinking. And then it got to a place where I had to drink regardless of whether I wanted to or not, because I would become violently ill. And I don't give that lip service. I would get really ill if I didn't drink. Shaking was the easy part. The other stuff was worse. And so I make a sincere plea to this God, if you're out there. And I was one of those guys who bristled with antagonism when you talked about God. I wasn't too thrilled about hearing about this power called God, because I used my thinking mind to sum up what God should have done. And he didn't. So therefore, God was cruel and evil. But then we get to a place of incomprehensible demoralization, and suddenly we turn to anything that would work. And I always have turned back to this power, even in here sober, when I was angry with him, when I thought this power wasn't following the script that I wrote. When I was faced with unemployment and incredibly challenging financial times, divorce, losing a house, argue, bargain, get angry with God, try to make a deal with God. I'm not praying to you anymore. Then I turn back. Father, please show me what to do. But I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I'm very grateful for that. And if you knew me when I was drinking, you'd be grateful too. Trust me. My home group is a Vision for You group. We meet in Union, New Jersey, which traffic is about 2 hours from here. MapQuest told me 26 minutes. So I'm going to call up the head MapQuest guy, and then I'll have to write inventory tonight. We're in Union, New Jersey. We meet tonight at 7:30 to 8:45. And we're a group that talks about the solution experientially from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you want a solution, how to recover, you can visit our group. And somewhere within that hour, you'll have an awful lot of information on what to go home with, what to do in order to recover, who to look for, sponsorship. We have traditions meeting, a quarterly traditions meeting. And I will tell you, most people in Union, New Jersey don't like us. They hate us. They have names for us. That group, those people, don't go there. Then they hit a bottom, and they trickle into a Vision for You group, looking for a solution. And the members who are on this path do not say, I've never heard it, nor have I ever seen it, say, those are the non-Big Book people, the heck with them. We stand at the door ready. So we can show them a path to get free. Bill said something like, AA will destroy itself from within, not from without. You know what's happening in a lot of AA? It's the Big Book dumpers against the non-Big Book people. Those people, it's us and them. And what's really sad is the people who are claiming this book with their lips who are doing it. See, if someone's never walked through the Big Book and never had an experience with the work and never experienced the sunlight of the Spirit, is not really free but is in AA untreated, what do I expect if they look at the steps and say, stay away from that? If they see someone with a Big Book and say, stay away from them, what would I expect? Someone who may be untreated, let me be a teacher. But how sad is it when people who have this book and have had an experience and get back to worshiping intellect and their emotions and their thinking mind stand at the door and say, those are the non-Big Book people, those are the don't drink, go to meetings people, stay away from them. Challenge that. Challenge what they do in those groups. Challenge what they're putting out there. Challenge 90 meetings in 90 days. Challenge put the plug in a jug. We ought to, because it's bad information. But let me never, ever character assassinate the person. And that's what happens. And we become just as dangerous with this book as the person who's saying to the real alcoholic, just put the plug in the jug. Because if God showed up, he wouldn't want any of that stuff. Those of us who had an experience, go stand at the door and wait for a new person. And that's what we try to do at a Vision for You group. So when they bottom out, they come looking for us, and when they're really even more desperate than that, some of them ask me to sponsor them. And then they find out what any lens looks like, and they're not so sure anymore. My first home group was a group called the Free Spirit Group over in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. I was a member there for a good part of my sobriety, and we were up against it many times with this book and this information. A lot of contemporary don't drink, go to meetings in that area. And that was another group. They weren't too thrilled about hearing us coming in to give a talk. But I learned great lessons there. And I met great people, giants in Alcoholics Anonymous, great teachers, and one particular gentleman who walked me through this book. And then I found out a hard way, in a very challenging way, that if my teacher isn't growing in understanding and effectiveness, I can outgrow my teacher or my sponsor. And that was a tough one for me to come to terms with. Like, I felt disloyal, ungrateful to go out and seek a new teacher. But I was brought to a crossroads. And a new gentleman was put in my life. I prayed, Father, I need a new teacher. What do I do? And my current sponsor, Mark H., was put in my path. And that's the last 4 years about with this gentleman. And my life has been recreated many, many times for revisiting this work and incorporating a lot of other material along with, not instead of. I've been quick to see where religious people are at. I make use of what they offer. I've gotten into many, many inspirational books and sought experience with all of it. But not being attached to, although I was a few times, not being attached to the outcome, what I think the journey ought to look like. Because what we'll simply do then is just reinvent ourselves. We'll go right back to inquiring knowledge. Well, I think my spiritual experience should look this way. Or when I read some other inspirational books, I think I should be this way. Just be with it and let the work take you. Let God take you, rather than holding on to what I think the experience should look like. So before we get into this work, a couple of considerations that we have to take a look at. Is my recovery based in abstinence, or is my recovery based in spirit? See, if my recovery based in abstinence, then I can simply be one of those people, and this is fine if this works for you, if this gets you through tonight, that I could not drink, go to meetings, put the plug in a jug, may still have power, choice, and control, and none of the work, some of the many, any lengths that we have to go through, really applies. My recovery is based in abstinence, all I care about. It doesn't interest me to examine what type of person I be in all my affairs. I don't care about making amends. It's their fault. I just didn't pick up today, and that's all I care about. And we have that because you'll hear some members say, I'm not drinking, that's amends for everybody. That's enough amends. That's amends to everybody. I didn't pick up the drink today. Right. Or is my recovery based in spirit, which this work is aimed at? This work is aimed at spirit, not the thinking mind where the main problem for me lies. It's aimed at spirit. If my recovery is based in spirit, then I may be one of those people who's suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience would conquer, which means I have to be one of those guys or some of our women who have to go to some of the many, any lengths in order to get recovered. And some of the many, any lengths is the third step decision. Well, am I willing to live on terms other than my own? And then going through a fourth step inventory, a thorough fourth step inventory, looking at me for the first time and not holding up a mirror to you anymore. And some of the considerations our book gives us. Is my recovery based in absence and spirit? Trust me, if it's based in absence, you can't wait till I am out of here. We're faced with, excuse me, spiritual life or spiritual death. Spiritual death for me, if I don't have this spiritual revolution, if I don't have this spiritual experience, if I'm not reintegrated with this power called God, it's spiritual death for me. And what that simply means is I will be blocked from the sunlight of the spirit. The old way of living, old way of thinking will be present again. And little by slowly, I will find myself picking up a drink no matter how hard, no matter how much I try to think the drink through, because I have a mind that will take me back to that which is killing me, and it'll be booze. It'll show up in different sorts of sprees at first, but eventually it'll be booze. And for us to drink is to die. It isn't only spiritual death for me. It's spiritual death for many. It's spiritual death for the people that God had me lined up to work with. The people, the students that God had me to go teach will never get that. The family, a book talks about taking this into our homes, occupations, and affairs, homes first. The homes, the family members who I had was supposed to bring, if you will, this new spirit, this awakened spirit into their life is no longer there, and they experience that also. And if you don't think that's true, take a look at family afterwards when it says, years of living with an alcoholic will make any wife or child neurotic. The whole, neurotic, not erotic, neurotic. Make the whole family ill. The whole family is to some extent ill. So it's spiritual death for many. Spiritual life, when we're in the sunlight of the spirit, means spiritual life for many. Not only for me because I get free of alcoholism and thinking about a drink is removed from the equation, but the people, the students that God has ready for me, I can teach. The places I'm supposed to go talk, I can go. Taking these principles into my home, occupation, and affairs, I can. And the people who show up unexpectedly for me, but God had them ready, you know, the co-workers who need help, the friend of a friend of a friend who's suffering from alcoholism, and I'm recovered, and I can go offer. Spiritual life or spiritual death. The other consideration I got to work with, I had to sit with this and get it, is that there's certain things we need to do in order to recover. But am I looking at this stuff, the inventory, the prayer, the meditation, the visiting relatives, the going to a doctor, the sitting with a new prospect, am I looking at it like I have to do this, I got to do this, I need to do this, or do I work with, I get to do this, I get to get a sponsor, I get to do inventory, I get to visit my family, I get to take the kids to soccer, I get to, because we know what the alternative is, laying up in some detox on a good day. And for me, I was left in the back of a hallway June 23rd, 1988, literally dying of untreated alcoholism. If I live to be 100, I'll never be as old as the day I walked into here in 1988. There were no more bargaining chips for me. And I didn't know I was going to wind up on this path. I just knew for the first time in my life that I didn't want to die. And that's the beginning of my spiritual experience. It came in the back of a seedy, dirty hallway on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. and I made a plea to God, take me from this, I don't want to die. It's the first time in my life, and I reflected on that in here. I don't want to die. And my Heavenly Father didn't have to show up in some decorative palace or some, you know, high-end classy AA meeting where people look good. He showed up in the back of some filthy hallway to get one of his children. And then I got put on this path. And I realized I didn't want to die, and I'll do anything not to. And then I find myself in here, get placed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I sought this with the desperation of a drowning man. 18 years later, thank the good Lord, I still am, because I have revisited this work many times and do lots of work with 10 and 11 and work with lots of people and get lots and lots of phone calls and people I don't even sponsor, but I do my best to handle all those calls and work with those people because I know what it's like being on the other end when I call up. I'm currently working with a word called immediately in step 10. Immediately. Not hanging out with a resentment that I can't shake. Write the inventory, pray, and it's still there. Immediately discuss it with someone. And I call up, there's a few people I call up to read inventory, and they graciously listen and embrace what I got. So when the phone calls come in, I do my best to reciprocate that way, because that's how God would want it. The power comes to me and out, to me and out. When our book says we begin to sense the flow of His Spirit into us, well, what am I doing with that? I got mine, you get yours. Or they say, here, in abundance I give to you the way my Father gives to me. After I got out of my fifth treatment center, I had conceded to my innermost self, our book talks about this being the first step, conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. It didn't mean I was going to recover yet. But when I conceded, when we get to that place of submitting under pressure, when we know it's over, and we'll do anything to keep it stopped. That's a spiritual event when that happens. We have, most of us, this moment of clarity where it stops. The train stops. We get clear. I don't want this anymore. And there's no reservations, any kind, no lurking notion. We're really clear on, I'll do anything to stop this. And that's what happened to me. Doesn't mean we're going to get recovered because I had two more treatment centers left in me. But I had conceded, gone into my fifth treatment center for 9 weeks and got drunk 2 days later. Hit my sixth treatment center out in a day and a half. Seventh treatment center, thank the good Lord, something happened. But after 10 days of being in my seventh treatment center, and God willing, my last one, my mind still was telling me maybe a little bit different, but Spirit kept moving me to people who had a solution, and I found myself in Minnesota. My family thought a lunacy commission should be appointed for me, like our book talks about. 5 treatment centers, 9 weeks in one of them, and you're still drunk. I thought I was hopeless. I was one of those people who were really, really beyond ill. Beyond help, beyond God. And I start to hate God because of that. What I didn't know, what I know now and come to experience, is what step one tells me. That if I'm a real alcoholic, I have no power, choice, and control to stop it. And getting angry with someone for relapsing, maybe I'm not a real alcoholic because I can't identify with that. You relapsed again? Yeah. They're probably the real alcoholic who needs a solution now, not in 90 days. Sit with them now. My sponsor sat with a guy, one more arrest he was going to go away to jail for a very long time. Got out of jail, he was doing, what do they call that, probation, and he was looking to go drink again. And he showed up to my sponsor was in Staten Island at the time. He said, I'm in a lot of trouble. He says, I don't know what got me here, but here I am. And he was romancing, drinking, and some other substances. Well, here's what we did. My sponsor sat him down, walked him through the first 3 proposals. We held hands, did the third step together. He sat down, wrote inventory, came up with 7 names. I figured nowhere near enough to do this work. My sponsor said, good enough. 7, we need power. Lack of power is our dilemma. Let's get power. We sat down, the guy did his 5th step, gave instructions to 6 and 7, bang, out, making amends the next day. That fast. So the person who's relapsing regularly in AA needs to get to this work if they care to have it. Now, Not next month. Not make 90 meetings in 90 days. Not here's a quarter, call me. Now. That's overlooked in a lot of our AA meetings. Lack of power, choice, and control, step one tells me. Step one tells me that I suffer from a phenomenon called craving, that whenever I drink alcohol, the craving's intensified, never satisfied. More was my drink, and I had no idea when that was going to stop. It stopped when it wanted to. I have a mind that will take me back to that which is killing me. It's called the obsession of the mind. It'll pretty up a junkyard to get me back to a drink. And if I'm around here a little while, it'll show up in different ways. The drink will disguise itself. If I'm untreated, they're called sprees. The sex spree, the food spree, the money spree, the anger spree, the fear spree, sprees. Because what I'm doing is trying to seek some sort of comfort somewhere. What I'm really doing is running away from the discomfort because it's on me again. And eventually, I'll have the strange mental blank spot, order a double Jack, let's get going. Right? Or a beer, whatever your thing was. And we're wondering, how did this happen? And people wonder, hey, he was sober, she was sober, this thing, what happened? Real alcoholic. When I see them relapsing, like me, when I used to relapse, the real alcoholic, they need power. Step one tells me I am drinking. You know, you'll hear in contemporary AA, step one tells me I can't drink. No, step one tells us we are drinking. Not that we can't drink. Step one tells us, you are drinking. I am drinking. That's the lack of power, choice, and control in the mind before I even pick up a drink. The unmanageability as a result of drinking, a blind man can see it. No rent is being paid. The kids aren't taken care of. The family is neglected. Our lifestyle starts to resemble the drunk. Whether it's an internal condition or external condition or both, it starts to resemble a drunk. Spiritual malady. What, CNN News, half the planet suffering from a spiritual malady, right? And we have a lot of people in AA who suffer from a spiritual malady but don't have the obsession and compulsion to drink. Have a mind that will take me back to that which is killing me. So the lack of power, choice, control is in the mind before I pick up a drink. Get out of treatment after 9 weeks, my mind said, suddenly the thought crossed my mind that I can drink, it'll be different this time. And I go with it. My current insanity is always listening to a thinking mind. I'm delusional. So step one tells me I'm drinking, and I don't know what that day is going to look like. I can't think the drink through. I ran over to page 24 because we'll hear in a lot of, especially these beginners meetings, where they tell a newcomer, think the drink through. Play the tape to the end. First of all, they forgot to tell that newcomer about something that we can experience as a real alcoholic called the strange mental blank spot, which means we're just drunk. Wondering, how in God's name did this happen? At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, we pass into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into my mind to deter me. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted. Think the drink through. Bring the body, the mind will follow. The last thing I wanted was my mind showing up anywhere. The main problem in alcohol centers in the mind, not the body. And we tell a newcomer, don't drink, go to meetings, bring the body, the mind will follow. We just gave him a death sentence. Unless we're informed and we've had an experience with this book, then we're not saying things like that. Then we're saying things, do you have a sponsor? Have you gone through the work? Where are you in inventory? Have you made a decision yet? Are you a real alcoholic? And we hopefully bait that drunk to get spiritual consent. Because I'm not one of these people. I wasn't brought up in saying, I'm your sponsor. Ask me. Give me spiritual consent. Then I can go at you. And you can't say, don't ask me those questions. Life or death. Spiritual life, spiritual death. Step one tells me I'm drinking. I have a phenomenon called craving, mental obsession, spiritual malady. If the problem is in the mind, where my book tells you main problem for alcohol sin is in the mind, not the body, where's the solution? I raised my hand and said, well, if the problem's in the mind, that's where the solution must be. The solution is not in the mind. The solution is an awakening of the spirit. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we shake out mentally and physically. My job is to seek this power. I'm an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life. No human power can relieve me of my alcoholism, and that includes her. We hear it. I'm in this great relationship. Terrific. Everyone likes to have a great relationship. I'm thinking different. I'm feeling good. I'm going to the gym, and we have that little euphoria. And then she says, I don't like you anymore. I'm going to drink. My recovery is based on an external condition. I'm in serious trouble. And she or he is an external condition. Money is the external condition. Having page 52 in order, right, looks good for a while, but if I depend strictly on that, I'm in trouble. It's the internal remedy that works. It's called God. Step one paints me right into a corner. No human power is going to relieve me of my alcoholism. Well, that just cuts off everyone, including the AA meeting. AA means consisted of human powers. We come here. There's power in the unity of this fellowship. We feel the camaraderie when we walk into a place like this. It's band-aid on open wounds when we get here. But that itself is insufficient. We need to experience the power of God. We hear in AA, it's a we program. We admitted we're powerless over alcohol. It's a we program. I thought it was a spiritual program. Doesn't we imply a human power? Doesn't we imply self-reliance? Doesn't we imply me and I can't keep me sober? It's a spiritual program. With spiritual principles, not spiritual pot, spiritual program. And I need to seek this. God could and would if he was sought. And we get to have an experience and it becomes God can, has, and continues to. If I seek him, we get free. We get free. And if anyone's here tonight wondering when the obsession is going to be off them, I can offer you this, that you can get free and drinking is removed from the equation. Not like what we show up with step one with, where it's on us constantly, but we can't get away from it. We're no longer in that place of I'm drinking no matter what, unless I seek God. I had made many, many attempts to stop drinking. I had many, many powerful desires to stop drinking. And still got drunk. And in the back of a hallway in 1988, it was done. And there wasn't this much of a reservation, nothing. Everything was removed from me. Which is what the work does, by the way. It's about removal. In order to get free, it's subtraction, not addition. Back to the relationship stuff. We come in here like I did, right? And we have what we talk about, that hole in the soul, that void. I feel empty in here. Really, what's happening, we're just filled with contempt, prejudice, old belief systems, pomp, calamity. There's this wedge between us and God, if you can see it with the mind's eye, right? It's the only way I can describe it adequately. But we feel empty, and what we do, we start reaching out, get the car, get the money, get the job, get the relationship out there, external conditions, and it works for a little while, but we still feel empty and wondering why what's on us all the time. Then the car gets old, the relationship gets old, I bring my old behavior back into those affairs, and I'm wondering how come I want to blow my brains out, and I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. In order to fill that void that we feel, we have to literally remove everything that's in there. If we have an 8-ounce glass full of water and try to fill it up, what happens? It just pours over. There's too much. That filled glass is what makes us up, and it's full of things that are killing us. We simply have to empty it out and fill it up with the Spirit of God and awake. And that's what this work does. That's why a lot of people run when they hit step four. Because the rubber hits the road. It's one of the many any lens. And we feel like we're dying when we go through this work. It's drastic and revolutionary proposals they're talking about. It's uncomfortable. A book in the 12-inch hole says, who cares to admit complete defeat? None of us. Who cares to look at manifestations of self and I can't blame you anymore? It's necessary. It's vital. And I need to know God showing me. You want get free? Here's what's in your way. I'll help you out of the way. I'll help you get out of the way. And we have 12 proposals to get completely free of alcoholism. So I'm painted into a corner in step one, and step two offers me a solution. Came to believe that a power greater than myself will restore me to sanity, wholeness of mind. And in wholeness of mind, because of a spiritual experience, my thinking mind is no longer telling me about drinking. And if I'm waking up and I'm growing up spiritually, and I'm really working with 10 and 11, even the untreated behavior is dead. I am free. Oh, I'll have to write inventory from time to time because parts of self may show up in a form of a resentment or an expectation or a fear, a little contempt once in a while. But I'm not experiencing untreated alcoholism in the form of sprees and contempt all the time or simply living on page 52. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. We have an experience, we start to really believe in this power based out of the experience we have. We seek experience. We show up to this power of God and we're wondering, you know, how do I believe? Who do I believe in? And when we start a chapter to agnostics, it blows the door wide open on any contempt that we may have when we're talking about God. What a powerful chapter of spiritual literature. Our own conception of God, no matter how inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. And at the beginning, it could be G.O.D., group of drunks for good orderly direction. The bottom line here is, am I willing to go along spiritual lines or not? Am I willing? Yes or no. Circumstances in step one allowed me to be willing. So step two for me offered a solution. It was a pointer to the solution. The way all this work, a pointer to God. My thinking mind, main problem for me, my thinking mind. My thinking mind will get me into trouble faster than the biggest person in this room. My thinking mind will do me in faster than the biggest, toughest guy in a bar. My thinking mind will destroy me. The only way I rely on my thinking mind is when it's completely cleared of wrong motives and I'm walking on this path and I still seek counsel. My thinking mind, I use it by making plans. Like getting here tonight, making plans to get here, making arrangements to get here. I use it. My thinking mind is set aside, and my way of going through the day is relied upon God and inspiration, intuitiveness, seeking counsel, clear of wrong motives. I can make a list, a to-do list for today. Need to do this, got to get to work, call the boss, call a client, take the kids to practice, cook dinner, you know, our usual mundane tasks that we do sometimes. Plan it out and I go. I use my thinking mind. When it's using me, I'm driving here and I'm character assassinating the guy from last week who didn't talk about the big book. Right. I'm worried about next week. I'm worried about what happened a week ago. I'm in 10 years ago. I'm in 5 years from now. Only woulda, coulda, shoulda. And that guy at the meeting and she better not start this. When I come home with dinner ain't ready and it's just, no, none of it's good. Why am I driving to this meeting? Why did they ask me to speak? I got nothing to share. I should just go home. It's too much traffic. Thinking mind, thinking mind, thinking mind. That guy asked me to sponsor him. I can't stand him. Oh my God. Obsessive and compulsive thinking mind. And what the spiritual awakening allows me to do is recognize that and get free of that in here also. So step two was my solution, was appointed to the solution and study chapter to agnostics. They beg us to lay aside prejudice, lay aside old ideas. One of the greatest prayers I've worked with is something called a lay aside prayer or set aside prayer. When I first heard that prayer, I thought I was telling God, what you gave me is not good, I want more. Want something different. All we're simply doing is laying it aside. If I have a bookshelf full of books and I buy new ones, I take some down and put them to the next level and put my new books up. I'm just laying aside to make room for new experience. Lay aside prayer. God, please let me lay aside everything I think I know about the big book, the 12 steps, AA, and you, God, for an open mind, new experience. Father, please let me see my truth. Let's go. Just lay aside. No one's telling me to forget it. It didn't work. Just lay it aside. So am I willing to have God be everything? What was my choice to be here? And again, I think our book, as tough as our book can be, is very mild here. You know, they ask, what's our choice to be? Is there really a choice? I'm faced with alcoholic destruction or finding a spiritual way of living. A spiritual way of life, and our book says, or else. I know what the or else is. I'm back in a hallway in a Lower East Side on a good day, drinking Mr. Boston Blackberry Brandy to pass out, because the pain of being awake and sober is too great. That's my or else. That's my alcoholic destruction. And we take people with us. Step three, I make a decision in three, and it's simply a decision. When I was going to meetings in Brooklyn, I would hear, do the AA waltz, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, or do a step a year. And I don't get that. But I do get this, that I had to be willing to live life on terms other than my own, God's terms. I live life on God's terms today, not life on life's terms. I fell miserably living life on life's terms. Chaturthi Agnostic says God's terms are easy, open, all-inclusive, never exclusive. When we're in the sunlight of the Spirit, it's just kind of like, with all the challenges, with all the things our families have to go through sometimes, there's something deep down in here that we move, we move, we move. No attachments. Some requirements in step three talks about, am I convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success? Something to sit with, because the first answer I'll always give to the sponsor is, oh, sure I am. Sit with that. Am I really convinced that my life in every area of my life can hardly be a success based on me running it? One of the assignments I got to do about the third time through the work was go through every area of my life and sit with it. Did I think I was doing a good job or not? That I think I was capable of getting past any unmanageability that I was experiencing. Was I involved in any of this stuff? And I had to search diligently, because if there was a little tug on it, that means I was holding on to a little self-reliance here. And if I'm doing that, somewhere there's fear. And there's unmanageability. And here comes page 52. And if I don't do anything about that, here comes a suddenly. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind. A drink would be nice. We'll hear lots of times about the third step decision, about turning it over, let go, let God. How do you turn it over? And we can talk for hours and hours. And our book is so precise. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? Can't get any clearer than that. And they show us, what do we mean by turn it over, Peter? And this is how we do it. There's some neat stuff on page 62 and 63, if I can find it. Great promises, third step promises. It says, this is the how and why, but first I had to quit playing God. Why? It didn't work, right? Next, which means now, I decided hereafter in my drama of life, God was going to be my director. The director tells the actors what to do, right? The director on the set is the boss. Tells the actors what to do. God is the director. He is the principal, we are his agents. I didn't know what that meant. And then I sat with my sponsor. Very simply, Michael Jordan, we all heard of Michael Jordan, right? He's the principal. He hires an agent. He gives the agent power to go out and represent him. He goes back to the to Michael Jordan and says, this is what I have. And Michael says yes to this and no to that. We represent God. We are given great power in Alcoholics Anonymous. Page 68 says that God will demonstrate through us what he can do. That's great power. Work with another drunk is great power. We go out and represent God. We're his agents. He's the boss. He's the father. We're the children. Unconditional love. Teach us and guide us. Provide us what we need all the time.